I'd like to welcome all of you to this portfolio committee meeting. I have two apologies, one from Honorable Natasha Michaels and the other from Honorable Connie September. Dr. Kuranoff will join us shortly. He's still in a meeting at the Chief Whip's office. There are four now. Ms. Bowman also sends an apology. We have only one item on our agenda, and that's the briefing by Transnet on their annual report and the financial statements for 2011-2012. And thereafter, the committee will remain and consider the minutes of our previous meeting. I think it will only be in order if we could have a quick introduction so that we all hear who are all here and who you represent. My name is Peter Maluleka. I'm a member of this committee. We'll go this way. And everybody must introduce themselves, please.
Tisang Muchumi, and I'm the secretary for the committee.
Good morning, my name is Chris Lord, I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning, Aubrey Mugwena, member of the portfolio committee.
Good morning, Goedemorgen, Eric Marais, member of the committee.
Good morning, my name is Carl Sotrigwa, I'm Chief Executive of Transnet Port Terminal.
Good morning. My name is Siyabonga Ngakama. I'm the Chief Executive of Transnet Freight Rail.
Good morning. It's Mark Craig McDonald, Group Executive Planning and Monitoring at Transnet.
Good morning. Victor Sekese from Sizo and Saruwa Kogoto, the External Auditors to Transnet.
Eric Prinsler, also from CSN Slovak Vodo, from State External Auditors.
Morning, I'm Siyabonga Mahlangu, the Special Counsel to the Minister of Public Enterprises.
Morning, my name is Mboniso Sikonyela. I'm the Head of Communication at Transnet.
Good morning, Noctula Kumalo. I'm the Acting Group Company Secretary. Acting Group Company Secretary for Transnet.
Can we just finish this side at the back?
Good morning. My name is Eric Postgat. I'm the researcher for the committee.
Let's start right at the end and then come this
way. Mr. Abrams, PNG.
Morning, Yoli Zwalandu, Communications Parliament.
Morning, Londo Telezi from Business Report.
Morning, my name is Ziwe Talia, I'm from Transnet Group Communications.
I'm Kosa Logongo from Group Communications.
Morning, I'm Caroline PLO to the Deputy Minister.
Morning, my name is Bodhi, I'm from Public Enterprises.
Morning, my name is Komaso Pichela from Transnet.
Good morning, I'm Charles Moller, the CEO of Transnet Pipelines.
Good morning, I'm Nonkululeko Sishi, Group Executive Human Resources at Transnet.
Good morning, my name is Doris Tebe, I'm a board member at Transnet.
Morning, my name is Marco Huma from DPE Transport Unit.
Good morning, Nilesha Myers from Public Enterprise.
Transnet National Ports Authority.
Good morning, I'm Richard W., Chief Executive, Transnet Rail Engineer.
Good morning, Nkuti Mabandla, Group Leader.
Good morning, Yasmin Forbes, Board Member, Transnet.
Morning, Anuj Singh, Chief Group Chief Financial Officer.
morning. Raisibele Kule, Group Executive, Property and Transnet.
Morning, Chair. I'm Martin Capello, Office of the Group Chief Executive.
Good morning. My name is Sam from the Department of Public Enterprises, Parliamentary Liaison Officer.
Morning. Brian Molefe, Group Chief Executive, Transnet.
Good morning, Chairman. I am non-executive chairman of Transnet. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I was with the minister and the deputy minister yesterday and Sunday, and so I had to introduce both of them. And the one's name is knowledge and the other one's name is gratitude. So I then said, you know, with knowledge and gratitude, I think DPE will go a long way.
Goes up,
the return on total average assets does not increase as fast. But but this is a ratio that we should not be too worried about, because while we have a big capital expenditure problem. Our operating expenses increased by about 21.8%. This was in line with expectations. Our operating expenses increased by about 5 billion. However, at 5 billion increase, or at 21.8% increase, our operating expenses are still below 2.5% planned expenditure for the year. So we still underspend the budget for the year. And 52 personnel costs were 52% of our total expenses. Our profits were 19.8% up, as I said, at 18.8 billion. This is a marked increase from where the profits were in 2008 at 12.8 billion, and quite a considerable jump from 15.7 billion to 18.8 billion. Transnet Freight Rail contributed 50% of EBITDA, TNPA about 27%. Depreciation, amortization, and amortization increased by 16.3%, and this is because of the larger capital base that we ended the year with. Net finance cost increased by about 30.9%, from 2.8 billion to 3.7 billion. This was because right at the end of the previous financial year, we did a $5.1 billion bond in the U.S., and we carried the cost of the bond for the whole year in the year under review. Taxation increased from $1.5 billion to $2.1 billion. This is very good news because we paid more to the Treasury by way of taxes. 40.7% increase, but I must mention that this is largely due to capital gains. It is not really physical cash, it is just the amount of capital gains tax that we are deemed to have paid from the revaluation of the asset. This is the summary of our balance sheet, Chair. Total assets increased from 167 billion to 178 billion. A big contribution of that has been fixed assets, which increased from 137 billion to 155 billion. Equities and liabilities increased from about 167 billion to 178 billion as well. Chair, this slide shows how property, plant and equipment, the jump from 137 to 155 happens. And you'll see that the bulk of the contribution to the jump of about 18 billion is largely due to additions of 23 billion, which coincide with the capital investment that we have made. So this is not just the revaluation of assets that has increased our fixed assets. It is actually physical additions of capital assets that we have brought into the business. And return on average total assets has been declining for a while, from 2008, but between 2011 and 2012, there has been, for the first time in 5 years, an improvement in the ratio of return on total assets. And we think that from now on, it will it has troughed, and it will increase from now on, and it will be better than what it is. Total borrowings were 60 billion at the beginning of the year. We ended the year with total borrowings of 58 billion. Which means that we did debt repayments of about 2 billion. And so in the year, we repaid the borrowings of about 14 billion and we only borrowed about 11.1 billion. So we reduced the stock of debt by about 2 billion during the financial year, which is also very good given that we had a capital expenditure program of about 23 billion during the year. This is a abridged income statement, cash flow statement. As you see, we started the year with cash equivalent at the beginning of the year of about 10 billion, and we ended up with about 1.1 billion because we have repaid debt cash utilized from financing activities, about 2.9 billion, and we invested about 24 billion. We just started the year with a lot of cash in the bank, and cash generated from operating activities was about 18 billion and 17.9 billion. And we ended the year with 1.1 billion. The bottom right table shows the sources of funding from GMPN, about 0.5 billion. GMTN is the global medium-term notes, domestic medium-term notes, about 1.8 billion, commercial paper, 3.2 billion, and bank loans, about 5.6 billion. In terms of performance share, for the first time in the history of Transnet, we transported about 201 million tons of freight on rail. This has never been done before. I must mention that Mr. Gama's team has been extremely dedicated to ensure that this happens and that we will grow again during this year. But we had a 10.4% increase in goods that were transported on rail. The general freight business increased by about 9.9%, export coal 8.8% from 62 million tons to 67 million tons, and export iron ore by 13.2% from 46 million tons to 52 million tons. As I said earlier, Chair, the general freight business grew by about 9.9%. The productivity and efficiency indicators for general freight also improved during the year. The GTK local per month improved by about 1%. On-time departures improved by about 18.9%. On-time arrivals improved by 17%. And weather turnaround times also improved during the year. And this is a measure of the dedication of the Transnet freight rail business in Transnet. Other commodities, containers on rail improved by 21.5%. We were carrying 627,000 containers in the previous year, and this year, and in the last year under review, we carried 762,000 containers on rail. This has increased our rail-friendly market share from 30.9% to 34%, and this contributes significantly to the shift from road to rail. And so we have started with a shift from road to rail, and we have in the first year made a dent on a shift from road to rail. Domestic coal also improved by 17.3%, and export manganese by 14.2%, from 4.8 million tons to 5.5 million tons. Export coal, as I said, Chair, increased by about 8.8%. The GTK local per month also improved by about 76%. On-time departures improved by 10.7%. On-time arrivals also improved, and the waiting cycle times also improved during the year for the export coal business. The export iron ore improved by 13.2%. The productivity and efficiency indicators also all improved, especially the on-time departures, which improved by about 58%, and arrivals by 53%. Unfortunately, the wagon cycle times deteriorated by about 9%, but this will be fixed during this financial year. On the maritime, we increased the volumes of containers through our ports by 6.6%. The productivity indicators also improved. Gross crane moves at Pier 1 improved by 3.8%. Gross crane moves at Pier 2, which is Pier 1 and Pier 2 is the Devon container terminal. At Pier 2, it unfortunately deteriorated from 8.7% This is largely due to the old equipment that we have at Pier 2. We are happy to announce that we've ordered new cranes, very big cranes that will be arriving from the month of December. And so we should see productivity improvement at Pier 2. The other shipping delays improved by about 40% in Devon. Shipping delays have improved. It means that the ships don't delay anymore. Because if I say shipping delays have improved, it could mean they've got worse. Petroleum, unfortunately, we carried less volumes on our petroleum volumes from especially Devon to Johannesburg. We did minus 7.1% of volumes compared to the previous year, but this was largely due to problems in the industry. Capacity utilization at Devon-Johannesburg pipeline is also down at about minus 8.8%, and the capacity utilization of crude was also down by about minus 8%. However, internal production interruptions have improved. Now, I must mention, Chair, that the performance in the petroleum in the pipelines business has largely been due to the unavailability of product from our customers. There were problems in the industry during last year. This is our proudest slide, Chair. Disabling injury frequency rate has improved from 0.82 to 0.65, which is a 20.7% improvement from the previous year. Employee fatalities were down 41%. Now, every single employee that dies is a tragedy, but the number of employees that died on duty during the year under review decreased from 12 to 7, and 7 is the lowest number that we've had in the last 5 years. Public fatalities also dropped from 151 to 100, which is a 33% improvement. Unfortunately, we may not be able to say the same this coming year, due to one incident which claimed about the cost of losses reduced from 1 billion. Cost of losses as a result of the
which claimed about this complete that Mr.
35 people. It was widely covered in the press. Cost of losses decreased from 1 billion to 432 million. This is losses due to incidents and accidents that happen in the business. So that has been decreased by about 67%. This is our 7-year capital investment program over the last 7 years. In 2006, we invested about 6.6 billion capital expenditure. In 2011, this increased to 21.5 billion, and we did 22.3 billion during the year under review. And as I said earlier, this is the highest amount we have invested in a very long time in 1 year. During this year, our target is to invest about 31 billion in capital expenditure in the business. The bulk of the money went into rail and others, about 65%. And about 46% went into the general freight business. You will also notice that the maintenance has been 48% of the money that has been spent so far, and about 52% will be expansion in the previous financial year. So 11.1 billion went into expansion, and about 48% into maintenance. This is also the first time that we have spent more money in expansion than in maintenance. Usually we spend more money in maintenance than in expansion. These are some of the major capital expenditures during the year. The acquisition of locomotives, 110 plus 19E, 98 locomotives were purchased, 44 plus 15E, 44 locomotives, and 100, 43G diesel locomotives we bought, 39. So of the 110, for the class 19E, we took delivery of 98. Of the 15E, we took delivery of the 44 that was ordered, and of the 143 GE diesel locomotives, we took delivery of 39. We also put into service 354 wagons for Eskom coal, export coal 652 new wagons, and export iron ore 720. We did some conversions of locomotives and overhaul programs of the locomotives. We did 13,755 wagon liftings, that is the maintenance of wagons, and we converted 796 wagons from BA to C-type. We do all of this work at our rail engineering facilities. We have also refurbished rail. We've put in bought one tug for the Port of Devon. During this year, we have already approved a tender for the acquisition of more tugs. We have bought cargo handling equipment and facilities, and the pipeline from Devon to Jameson Park, 555 kilometers, was commissioned during the year, as well as the inch line from Jameson Park to Al Road, from Al Road to Langlaagte, and from Kendal to Waterloo. All of those have been completed. We are finalizing the building of the terminals for the pipeline, and we hope to finish that by December next year, and that will be the end of the NMPP. This is our locomotive and wagon acquisition program. Since inception, we've bought 98 coal locomotives and have put about 39 into GFP. 2013, which is this year, we'll buy a further 12, 15 for the iron ore line, 61 for GFP, and 18 for the GFP 43, class 43. And in 2014, we'll buy 17 and 25 for the iron ore and 25 for the rest of the GFB locomotives, the 43 that we're buying for the 100 plus 43 diesel locomotives for GFB. So we have entered into contracts to acquire 32 more class 15E locomotives. Delivery expected in 15 in 2013 and 17 in 2014. This is a rolling stock acquisition plan over the next 7 years. 2013 will buy the 95 electric locomotives, 2,100 wagons, and in 2014 we'll buy the 50 of the 95 electric locomotives. The tender is just about to be finalized for the purchase of the 95 electric locomotives, which will be delivered during this year and next year. We will buy 599 further electric locomotives after the 95, 465 diesel locomotives, 19,400 wagons, 112 class 19E locomotives, and 23 class 15E and 3 diesel locomotives over the next 7 years. And this is how they will be acquired over the next 7 years. Chair, those are our demographics as a company. In 2011, we had 76% of our workforce as black, and now that has increased to 78.5%. Our female employees have increased from 20 to 22%. We planned to take in 60 engineering trainees during the 2012 financial year, and we did take in 60 engineering trainees during the 2012 financial year. We planned to take 180 technician trainees, and we took in 181. Artisans, we planned to take in 500 artisans during the 2012 financial year. We took in 854 artisans during the year. And sector-specific trainees, we planned to take in 1,500. We took in 2,506 during the year. Training spend as a percentage of personnel cost was planned to be at least 3.5%, and our training spend as a percentage of personnel cost was 3.9%. Our employee numbers, these are numbers, these are permanent contract employees from 47,000 to 50,000, 50.9,000 employees. Shall we? There was this issue of the pensioners, and we're happy to announce that since 2011. The TSDBS, so since 2007 the TSDBS and since 2011 the TTPS have made ad hoc bonus payments to pensioners of 1.5 billion in addition to the monthly pensions. Cumulatively, approximately 1.9 billion was paid to pensioners in excess of the 2% pension increase. In addition, over the past 4 years, Transnet has made ex gratia payments of 385 million to the members of the TSDBS. And these pensioners are typically widows of black pensioners with long service and relatively low paid pensions. And so these graphs show you the annual pension increase, which is 2% plus bonus. And as you can see, in 2012, that graph spiked because of a specific requirement or request from this committee to reconsider, and that is the implementation of that request. Has seen the red line go up. In 2011-12, freight rate increased containers from 627.8 TEUs to 760 TEUs. Automotives from 131,000 units to 144,000 units, and domestic coal to Eskom from 7 million tons to 8.5 million tons. This year, Eskom coal will be about 12 million tons. The estimated reduction of these volumes, GHG reduction in these volumes, being on rail rather than on road, is 218,000 tons of CO2 equivalent. So we have reduced our CO2 footprint as a company. The full operation of the new multi-product pipeline will reduce fuel tankers on road by about 60%, and this will also improve our CO2 footprint. Energy efficiency, we have reduced the total electricity consumption, and 68% of this was used for freight rail traction, 9% in building, and the remainder in transport. In 2011-12, we completed our carbon footprint study, and we accounted for 4.31 million tons CO2 equivalent, which is approximately 1% of South Africa's total emissions and 10% of South Africa's total transport sector emissions. Now that we are now able to measure our CO2 contribution share, the task now becomes how to measure if we are reducing or increasing our CO2 emissions going forward. And this will become part of our compact with the shareholder. Our BBB spend in terms of the codes has increased from 75% in 2011 to 80% of our total spend in 2012. And some CSDP highlights are the acquisition of 43 locomotives, including CSDP obligations amounting to 65% of the contract price. And the following key port handling equipment transactions were concluded during the year. 7 tandem lift crates,
6 mobile harbor cranes, 28 straddle carriers, 1 pneumatic ship unloader, 1 ship loader, 33 haulers, and 8 reach stackers, all of them with CSDP commitments. We invested 160 million in social programs across South Africa on healthcare, teacher education, sports development, container assistance programs, and employee volunteer programs. During the year, the second Pelo Pepper train was commissioned, practically doubling the reach of this award-winning outreach service to create healthcare access for approximately 360,000 beneficiaries. During the year, 5,000 learners and 600 teachers participated in the Rural and Farm School Sport Program, which targeted learners from 13 to 17 years of age in the poorest rural areas across the country. We also continued with our Container Assistance Program as an innovative way to address infrastructure challenges, with old and disused containers being used, refurbished to meet security and infrastructure needs, police stations, classrooms, and so on. And 28 million was invested since 2001 in building 33 satellite police stations and community centers. External audit. We continue to achieve an unqualified external audit report, but the external audit highlighted a number of reportable items in terms of Section 55 of the PSMA. There was no material findings on the audit of predetermined objectives by the Auditor General concerning the presentation, usefulness, and reliability of our information. And no significant findings were identified in respect of audit work performed, apart from PSMA issues already mentioned on the contract tested. A total of 105 contracts were checked for compliance to the procurement process by external audit over the last 2 years, with a total contract value of 51 billion. Out of a total of 102 controls assessed across the Transnet control environment, 91 controls were assessed as good, and 21 controls were assessed as in progress, while 0 controls were assessed as intervention required. Internal audits overall assessment of the effectiveness of the system of internal controls and risk management for the period from 1 April 2011 and 31 March 2012 were as follows. Governance, process, financial processes were assessed as satisfactory. People processes were assessed as satisfactory. And method and practice processes were assessed as satisfactory. The shareholder representative has determined that the materiality limit for reporting in terms of Section 55, B, 1, 2, and 3 of the PFMA is 25 million per transaction. 4 transactions have been separately reported in the annual financial statements. Amounts classified as fruitless and wasteful and irregular expenditure, as well as losses through criminal conduct, irrespective of value, are reported internally to the relevant structures, including the Group Executive Committee and the Board, to ensure that control weaknesses are identified and that corrective action is taken. Amounts totaling 89.6 million were reported as fruitless and wasteful expenditure during the year. The number of finalized disciplinaries has increased to 62 from 27 in the prior year. Losses and criminal conduct, the amount has decreased by 74% compared to the prior year to 76.9 million in the year. The number of incidents has decreased from 73 in the prior year, and the number of criminal cases registered has increased from 173 compared to 122 in the prior year. Total irregular expenditure was reflect a significant improvement compared to the prior year, from 8.3 billion in the prior year to 195 million reported in the year. I'm not sure how much percent that is, but it looks like it's significant. In all instances, value was derived by Transnet for work performed, and the number of finalized disciplinaries have increased to 10 in the year. Notwithstanding improvements made in some of the areas noted in the previous slide, the TFMA violations are still unacceptable, and consequently the following is being undertaken to further reduce TFMA violations. TFMA awareness, management training with accreditation on procurement policies and delegation authority framework, ongoing train-the-trainer training at the operational divisions, fraud awareness training, including the impact of PSMA, executive committee and extended EXCO awareness sessions. Implementation of the CURA system, which is a risk management system, which is a centralized database of PSMA reportable violations. Signing off on closed reportable items by independent parties. Monitoring and tracking open items, statuses and potential recoveries. Automated notifications and reminders to all related parties. Reporting functionality to identify common types of violations across the group in order to implement group-wide initiatives. Root cause analysis of items reported in previous year to ensure that these are addressed in order to minimize reoccurrence of similar issues. And linking of contract management and procurement systems to ensure PSMA compliance. So, Chair, in short, 2012, Transnet reports another year of robust performance characterized by financial stability, unprecedented growth in volumes, improvement in operational efficiencies and productivity, significant gains in safety resulting in a reduction in safety-related incidents, sustainability achievements for the economy, society and the environment, and an enhanced reputation of the company both internally and externally. In short, Chair, the 2012 performance has set a solid platform to execute on the market demand strategy. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Marefres. Let's hear from your team. If there's anything else that you'd like. Nothing? Especially people in the finance. Thank you so much, Mr. Minister, for this report. I think members have made notes on issues which they would like clarity on. Invite members to interact with the report. Honorable Maria, Honorable Mokoena. Chris, what is the Dutch letter? Oh, are these reading letters? Honorable Maria, Honorable Mokoena, Honorable Kuloro, Honorable Kuranov, Honorable Sonto and Honorable Nana, in that order. I'll read it for you. Honorable Mary.
Thank you, Chairperson. Please, if we first come back to page 12 of your slides, is your cash flow statement. Just want to ask a question to highlight me a little bit. We started with a 10 billion cash flow in the beginning, and I noted that you've said that you used cash cash for financing activities, but that was only like 2.9. Can you highlight me on the cash from operating activities, the last one that seems to be a loss, other operating activities, 4.8. What was that exactly about?
Which page are you on?
Page 12.
May I ask, members must just mention the page.
And it's page 12. Page 12. The cash flow statement. Then I want to move to the next one, is page 28. You always have to highlight positive and negative in life. So I will highlight the positive of the female employees. That's a positive, sir. But I just want to have a question about your people with disabilities. There's various jobs in Transnet with people with disabilities could be employed in. And I think there must be an increase on the 0.8% to get in line with the BEE policy. Can you please highlight me on that one? And then I want to talk the third one, page 29. I know about the bonuses given to the various pensioners. That is very nice and it's good and it's wonderful. But my question is around the 2% increase. You know, the 2% increase on a pension, if you're over years, is the average inflation rate is 6%. And every year you only get a 2% increase on your pension. Every year you fall backwards, 4%, 4%, 4%. So that is really a problem. So I want, how could we address this problem for only 2%? And then my question is, what was the average increase for the normal workforce in Transnet? B, for the normal workforce, A, B, for middle management, and C, for senior management, what was the average increase in annual salary in those three categories? Then my last question, what is the view of the board and the CEO about assets as far as land is concerned, what they don't use? I'm sorry, Chairman, I have to be direct now here. In the case of Saldanha Bay area, it has been identified by the president to actually push a large number of billions in that direction to develop the port and the area around it. There's some land lying in, and I mentioned it before to some of your other senior people sitting here in this room today, land that belongs to Transnet that still lies there for 20 years that haven't been done anything with. And maybe what they've actually envisaged to do with it should change, because after 20 years they've done nothing with that pieces of land. And what happens now, those pieces of land fall now within residential areas. You can't use it for anything else anymore. And the municipality is prepared to buy that land from Transnet, and the backlog for low-cost housing in that area is 4,000, and coming with your investment in Saldanha Bay area, there's going to be an increased demand for housing as well. So the municipality is prepared to buy that land for low-cost housing as well as gap housing that maybe address the needs of your people that will be coming in that way when the industrial development zone will be coming forward on that area, as well as your expansion in the harbour area. So I would really love to engage, and I formally ask you now as the CEO, because I did ask it previously in this committee meeting, to actually address people and see people from you, our partner, to actually come to agreement about those pieces of land to address the issue of housing in that area. Thank you very much.
Honorable Mukwena.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me welcome the report. A very illustrative report and very accessible by Transnet. We feel encouraged as parliamentarians to receive a success story. such as this one of Transnet, and it makes us feel very proud, and it justifies and vindicates our oversight and with the strong leadership. A few quick questions. Number one, I'm impressed that the external auditors are here. And there was this unfortunate oversight of a very egregious financial misconduct of 8.4 billion in Transnet. Now, when we engaged Transnet last time, Mr. Mulefe and Mr. Mkonazi tried to explain it the best way they could, because they said they were just new incumbents in office, and from then they want to make sure that such financial delinquency does not recur. But that does not liberate Transnet from actually explaining how that money was going to be recovered. 8.4 billion is a lot of money. And what escaped my logic is how could three levels of auditing, the internal audit of Transnet, the external one, and the AG office, how could they, how could that escape them? Now, why we're saying so is not just to dig up dead, so to speak, but want to make sure that just omission does not take place again in the future. And I'm saying that the external auditors are here to speak for themselves. That's number one. Number two, the multi-product pipeline, Devon to Joburg, you say that it's underperforming, not because of your fault, but because of lack of orders from the suppliers and so on. Two little questions subsumed in that. Do you foresee this problem recurring? And number two, to what extent is it linked to external factors like such as the Iranian oil sanctions, which is mooted by the America and the West? Next quick question, it's an in-house one. Governmentally speaking, what is the lifespan of the Transnet board as we speak now? And last time, Chairperson, when you were in the portfolio committee oversight, we really enjoyed visiting Purisport, the TRE division. It's a prodigy. It's a marvelous division of Transnet that makes us very, very proud. We were completely bowled over as MPs. We couldn't just believe the technological base, the asset that we actually have, which is house in Transnet, and which is under-marketed. Because when one went there, one just found a universe, a mini-universe of technology. I couldn't just believe what I saw there. That did us very proud. And we said that, I think the Sadiq was superintending that division, that what we must do as a portfolio committee is to expose to elevate the exposure of this thing to other ministries, especially in the economic cluster. Invite the other ministers to go there so that the good work that is there, we must also a little bit of it at Salt River here, should not be ensconced only and hidden away, concealed in Transnet, but other ministries like trade industry, economic development, insurance security, can actually see the world as it is right now. They do not operate in silos, and the danger is to reinvent the wheel or not to be aware of such big investment that is there. By contrast, when we came here to the port, to the Cape Town port, the port manager, the question of management administration, was nowhere to be found. We can't understand how a big port like that can operate without a port manager. They knew that the portfolio committee was coming, and he made sure that he cleared his diary to run away. Now, we're not impressed. And by contrast, all other port managers were there. They actually met us, Nguha, and what we call richest brain and so on, and the average just made sure that, not that we expect to be given whoever role, red carpet rolled out for us, but I mean, we are not representing our jackets. We are representing the shareholders, the shareholders, but to respect the voters who elected this government. So when members of parliament come there, we must be taken seriously because we are assisting in the accountability. Yeah. Chairperson, let me not hold the stage.
Okay.
If there's an opportunity, next time I'll come and raise other issues. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also welcome and thank the report from the CEO. I've got one question actually and two comments. The first one, actually, I wanted to commend the Transnet freight rail for the moving of the 20.1 million tons of freight during the year. How much?
201
million tons. I think we need to commend you as a committee, really,
yes,
on that one. Well done. And then I just wanted to check on the question of locomotive and wagon acquisition program. Because from what I've heard in the past, is that you've got locomotives to buy from General Electric. Now, on your record, I hear that you'll be buying more locomotives. And I'm just concerned about the building and the assembling of these locomotives locally, which will eventually create jobs. What about that program? Are you abandoning that one? Are you buying and buying? What is the situation on that one? And then, of course, a comment on the payment of the pensioners. We want to really commend you also on heeding that call by this committee, because this committee had to fight for that, so that we really commend you also for that one. I did not hear much about your, you know, previously there was this theft of goods along the railways and all that. I did not hear anything about that. If you could just further explain as to what is the situation around that. And for now, let me pause that. I'll come back. Thank you.
Thanks. Honorable Dr. Koranov, sorry, you're actually supposed to be before. No, it's done.
Thank you, Chairperson, and my apology for arriving late. I hope the Chairperson has explained. Congratulations on the three volumes. It makes for good reading. It's clearly understandable, and I think the format that you put for the committee or your annual report, I find it very refreshing and innovative and easy to read and follow the process, especially your sustainability report, your financial statements, and your integrated report. So congratulations on that one. I think it's 400 pages in total, but worth it. So I think we need to compliment you on that one. In your report, you say we are ambitious and determined, which is good. What we've seen in the oversight is only positive, physically when we go to the business units of Transnet. When we look at your sound financial statements, it looks extremely good. So I think you're running one of the jewels of state-owned companies in South Africa, and we need to congratulate on that. But if you're ambitious and determined, you will also likely overstep somewhere, because that's the way of leadership, and make mistakes. I have a few questions. I'm going to be very specific and not explain about it. The first one is on economic regulation. What you're asking for, if I hear you correctly, is credible appeal mechanisms. You plead for that, to monitor and the performance and decision of regulators. Now, NERSA, it seems you're okay, but on the ports regulator, where you ask for 18.06%, but they only gave 2.76%. Just unpack for the committee, what do you mean by credible appeal mechanisms to monitor the performance of regulators? Number two, on that same page, page 50, another regulatory reform is the ICMA, Integrated Coastal Management Act. As a portfolio committee, we're looking for that act, but we can't find it in Parliament. So we just want to compare notes with you. So that act potentially is going to take away 46 billion rand of your assets. It's no small implication. But it seems to me that act is in with the executive. If you can just share with us, because we want to protect your interests as well when that act comes to Parliament, but we can't find it in Parliament. And it seems it's not been introduced into Parliament. And maybe you can just explain to the committee what are the consequences for Transnet if that act was to see the light of day, as you put it in the report. Let me go to your financials, your annual financial statements. Page 5, the auditor reported, and you've said now to us you've fruitless and wasteful expenditure, 89.6 million. But in addition, the auditor general or the auditor has also said there's an irregular expenditure of 155 million relating to 4 contracts. And the auditor specifically says you did not take reasonable steps to prevent irregular expenditure. So my question is very simply straightforward. Did you take corrective disciplinary actions based on these 4 contracts of 155 million irregular expenditure? And maybe you can also just explain to the committee the fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 89.6 million. Then I go to page 38. And I think you would have anticipated this question would come. The fees and the remuneration. If I look at page 38, the fees for non-executive directors jumped from total 2011 to 2012 from 3 million to 8 million. That's no mean increase. That is substantial. And the names of the members are here with the individual increases they've received from 1 year to this. When you go to page 37, you look at the incentives, long-term incentives and short-term incentives of the board or your group executive committee members. Now, if I remember correctly, the shareholder put a moratorium on the remuneration of group executive committee members in state-owned companies. Now, in my mind, maybe I understand it correctly, that moratorium is still in place until such time that the shareholder gave or produced a guideline document to say, this is how we go forward. I want to CEO to explain to this committee this tremendous increases in the incentive payments and fees of non-direct executive directors against the background of a moratorium on executive remuneration. I fail to understand it. For me, it's simple. The minister says, don't increase, it's moratorium. Transnet says, there we go. And you give very valuable reasons on basis of your assessment. You operate in a market. Even you give specific guidelines that directed you. Benchmarks is Deloitte's remuneration survey. It's a market medium. We determine by the market. I can't bring the two together of the moratorium and your statement on page 32. I think I'll end there. Can I one last question on page 164. I think we discussed this last year. Your corporate governance, your board of directors. Now, your one member on page 165 has resigned from the board. But it's unbelievable. He served on 59 boards. And he was chairman of two chairmanships. Now, I don't want to go into the names of your other directors, but some of your other directors are not too far behind. Some of your directors, one director serves on 23 boards. Where do you get the time to make a contribution to Transnet if you serve on 23 other boards? And another member serves on 14 boards. I'm not including the chairmanships. I'm asking, how do you manage a board of directors where your board members serve on so many other boards? Some of your members are within limit, less than 5 or less than 10, but then a few members is just this unbelievable workload of serving on so many boards. I just need to get the explanation, how does it work in practice for a board member to serve on so many boards and still make a valuable contribution to your board? Our board, which is Transnet.
Well, thanks, and my apologies for being late. Dr. Koranov has touched on a few things that I wanted to raise. But can I quickly say, Chair, that with all the difficulties that our other SOEs are facing from time to time, it's probably about time that we should consider making a recommendation to the minister that from now going forward, CEOs of these other SOEs should be pushed from Transnet. Because clearly you have got talented men and women at Transnet who are a good example for others to follow. That was a comment. Secondly, is on what Ubud was talking about, Mr. Mkwana. What we saw in Salt River recently and what we saw in Kudu Sport. By the way, thanks for the boots that you gave us. I'm still using them back home. It was amazing, I mean, to realize that we've got this kind of a capability in the country. Keep up the good work. Having said that, in your report, GCO, you mentioned that you have a number of tenders that are going to be finalized for delivery of locomotives, for delivery of wagons. Of course, you did mention that some of the work is done in-house. My question is, what hinders Transnet from completely doing away with doing some of this work externally? What hinders Transnet from not doing all the work internally? I'm saying this from a layman's perspective, because I wouldn't know what's required for an electric locomotive, what's required for a diesel locomotive, and so on and so on. But my question, as I say, it's purely from a layman's point of view. What hinders you guys from not doing all this kind of work in Salt River and in Goedespoort, as we have seen? The second one, sir, is on, it's a comment on Pelo Pepper. You see, one of your failures at Transnet, you are either too shy to sing praises about yourselves, or you are too disciplined. You can never imagine the impact Pelo Pepper has on our people out there. As MPs, we interact with our communities. Only this year, Pelo Pepper was in Alice, where I was born, in the Eastern Cape. I think it stayed there for over 7 days. Every day, for the first time in 3 years, that neglected station was a hive of activity. People were being offloaded by buggies, by trucks, coming for help. And I'm saying, you are either too shy or too disciplined to sing your own praises, because this is one of the best things ever to happen to this country. And the third one, Chair, is it's to you, Chairperson. Seeing that you've had a bumper financial year, profits have been made, I know the next thing will be bonuses for executives from which CEOs to the rest of CEOs. So nobody will see them players. Nobody can run any. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my apologies for being late, and my apologies to Honourable. Two questions is all I need, and also my apology to Honourable Kronos for spilling water on it. I truly did arrive with a bang. Chairperson, my first question goes about the PFMA reporting. And firstly, may I thank Transnet for the fact that we had this presentation sent to us last week, so we did have time to go through it. So it does make things easier for us when we come together. The fruitless and wasteful expenditure amounts totaling 89.6 million were reported this year. Do we have sort of a rough idea of what the fruitless and wasteful expenditure was? And Chairperson, I see here the totally regular expenditure. There's a significant improvement, and I congratulate you on that, because it truly is significant, because it went from 8.3 billion to 195 million reported in a year. But what does worry me, it says the number of finalized disciplinaries have increased to 10 a year. Now, surely it can't just be 10 people causing this massive problem. So what is the problem finalizing the disciplinary committee? Because 10 a year in a company the size of Transnet does sound like a relatively small amount. So if you'll just elaborate so that we understand that better. Chairperson, and I'm very pleased that Honourable Murray did discuss the Transnet pensioners issue. Chairperson, Transnet will know that I've asked the public protector to investigate, do a full investigation into where the problems lie, both with the funds and with Transnet, with regards to the pensioners. Chairperson, what I don't like and what does disturb me is when we try and racialize the Transnet pensioners, and it's simply because of the line that says, typically these pensioners are the widows of black pensioners with long services and relatively low pensions. Chairperson, across the country, we have white widows, colored widows, black widows. I mean, color is absolutely irrelevant. We have 70,000 pensioners and their widows who are suffering. And I don't like to see things like that being racialized in this context. I think it's unnecessary, and I think it insults all race groups that have given a long, long service towards Transnet. Thank you, Chair.
So much. I think it's just that from time to time, and maybe I didn't intervene to remind members not to racialize this, because it was actually members who were representing the DA kept on saying that the majority of these people are black, and they're emphasizing the color that is affected by these challenges. But I think let's take note of it. Honorable Michael is saying. I have also two or so questions. The one I think Honorable Michael touched on, that was with regard to the fruitless, wasteful expenditure. Whether or not this has or this gives a negative impression of the systems there, the Transnet, internal control system. And if you could please give some clarity on the judicial proceedings that are mentioned on page 30. At the last paragraph there, which Transnet may enter into as defendant or plaintiff. What are the the issues here? If that is possible, I know this may be a lot of cases that you're referring to, but just to give the committee some idea. And this may not be here, but I just want to find out whether or not you have received any feedback on the concerns that you have raised with regard to the integrated controls management bill, that is the coastal bill that is making the rounds. I just want to get an idea whether or not you know that your concerns have been listened to, what the situation is, and what we as a committee can still do about it. I also just want to add my voice to, you know, the feedback that you get from members about our oversight. I must say there's a lot of good work that Transnet is doing. And I think a good example was when I was in India and I got a call from an old lady from the Northern Cape who was complaining about a clinic in the Northern Cape, and she said she met at Pilopepa, so she wants the committee to come and close the clinic. because one of the nurses there is just giving them hard time, and so she wants us to get rid of the nurse and to close the clinic because, you know, people just want pillow paper. So I think you're also creating problems for yourself. You know, and it really makes one feel good when you go to Noha. I think it was Noha or Sultana. Yeah, I think it was part of Noha, yeah. where we met one young girl. I think she was 22 years old or so, who was telling us that she can, you know, she can actually handle a very big vessel. She told us the size of this vessel, so we're not so familiar. Mr. Mora, I think you will remember that, which was very impressive. But it's not only that one case. There are so many cases that we come across of people who say, there's this lady at Mora who said she joined a Transnet as a tea lady, and she's now in charge of the control room. I think that just shows that those who assisted this lady actually take the time to know the people who work here and to see potential, you know, where it exists, and to give our people the opportunity to actually make a 360 degrees in changing their lives. So I really want to commend Transnet and leadership for that. We also met a very young lady here in Cape Town who said she was, I think she was a general worker or something of that sort, and she's now a harbour master or deputy harbour master. Very impressive, you know, changes that, you know, people experience in their lives. And, you know, we speak to the people who are undergoing the training in Kudusport, very young people who, I think there was one chap who was from some rural area, he said he never thought that he would ever get a dog's chance in life to get anywhere in life, you know. And the opportunity that he has given just to undergo that training, really means a lot to him. But what we said then as a committee was that when we spoke to this young lady who's able to control this huge vessel and the harbour masters that we have met, people in the control room that we have met, we actually requested them, and we want to bring this to your attention because we didn't consult with you. It was to say to them, now look, you know, when you find time, go to your former schools, be it your high school, and your primary, especially those who are from the townships, and tell them that you actually were in that school and where you are now and how you got there. Because we think that those are the people who can be your ambassadors. And we would like you to understand when your managers say they've given them time off to go and talk to their schools. Thank you, Mr. Mulefe. I think you've taken note of all the questions. And like Mr. McCollins, Shepherdson said, that you will see how you dish out the responsibilities to people to answer the questions.
Chair, I would like to start with the accusation from the honorable member from the DA that this management is treating the issue of pensioners in a racialistic fashion. And I would like to remind the honorable member that it was not this management that introduced in this country job reservation. It is not this management that had only white train drivers at a certain point in time in the history of this company. And so the racial profile
I have a point of order. Before you become aggressive with me unnecessarily, that is not at all what the intention of what I said was. What I said is, I hope that we don't racialize this issue, because it is not only black pensioners that suffer. It is white pensioners that suffer. It is coloured pensioners that suffer. And we must look at it over all the racial groups. I don't want any racial group set aside. That's what I meant. I have no problem with what you are saying here, and that's why I don't want you to get unnecessarily aggressive with me. I don't want this issue to be racialized at all, because it is the entire group of South Africans that gave up many, many hard years working for Transnet that suffer. And that's why I don't like that line that says typically these pensions get paid out to black widows, because then what happens, with the greatest of respect, is that these action groups meet, they will read that and then they'll go, what about the rest of us? Do you understand what I mean? So we must avoid racializing anything, because they all suffer because of this loss of income coming towards them.
No, I think we go in the wrong direction now. There was a task team to investigate of this portfolio committee in 2009, 2010, to look into the question of TSDBF and TBF. And we looked at all the pensioners. We came up with strategies together with Transnet and Treasury and other state departments. And finally, we put a report to Parliament. I'm going to jump now to the last briefing we received at O.R. Tambo Airport by the trustees of the two pension funds, stating exactly what is the update on this one. That was in June. And in that meeting, they gave us an update on the two pension funds, as well as an initiative taken by Transnet of an ex gratia payment to the poorest of the poor for historical reasons, but also current reasons. And this was addressed and given in writing to this committee. I think we must be very careful to take such a situation and put race in it. It is not the intention. The intention is to address, and this is why I want to compliment Transnet, they looked after, within the pension two schemes, the poorest of the poor, because you know exactly what are the situation of those. And by chance, those were black widowers. So I think we must really get away to put a racial content to this. This is about old people that they are getting their pension, and Transnet went an extra mile to look after the poorest of the poor. And I think we must welcome that. We must not fight Transnet on this issue and make it into a racial issue.
Thank you, Chair. If I have offended anyone, I wish to apologize, but I was just saying we must not be ahistorical. We must not forget our history. Chairperson, on the 4.8 other spending, other operating activities, in cash flow statements, there are no losses or profits. It's just cash outflows. So that amount is cash outflows. I don't know if you want to comment about exactly what it is.
When you correct it in your analysis, it relates, the big amount of 4.2 billion relates to finance charges. So it's actually finance charges that we've actually paid up due to the borrowing.
So just cash outflows, not losses. And then people with disabilities, I'll ask Ms. Nongo Sishi to respond to that.
Thank you. People with disability and Transnet current, in the last financial year, we had 440 of people with disability, and majority of them are employed within the administration part of the business where they are able to function, and others are employed depending on their disability or spread across Transnet. So it depends on the disability that they have.
I understand that. I just want to ask how we can up the number. That it's not like 1.5%, what we want to move to, but it's only 0.8%.
Through the chair, that target is being increased, and as we look into the current financial year, we have already started bringing in more people with disabilities, so the number for next year will definitely be higher than what we are seeing. We are trying to achieve national targets. Thank you, Chair.
In fact, in the next reporting cycle, you will be able to pick up that we employed more people with disabilities this year because we've been tracking it since the beginning of the financial year, that is improving. The increases for pensioners, Mr. Singh, on page 29, if you want to comment on that, what was the increase last year, that the, I think the concern was that the 2% increase is not enough. But can you just comment on what, how much would be the increase last year?
Thank you, Ryan. I think the 2% increase is the statutory increase that is afforded by the fund itself. And I think the add-on bonuses that we actually provide through the funds obviously augment that increase. And as you've seen on the graph, we've actually provided increases in excess of 3 times of inflation for the last year. On the TSDBF itself, it was about 17% at an inflation rate of about 5. So in that case, they had 3 times inflation. The only concern that that the 2% or the ad hoc bonuses does not address is obviously the base, because the ad hoc bonuses don't vest in the pension. But the investment strategy of the fund itself would try and see that the ad hoc bonuses are actually sustainable into the future over the life of the pensioners. And I think that's some of the things that we've discussed with Honourable Koronoff in terms of the special committee that was set up to look at that specific problem. So in terms of the long-term solution of 2%, 2% will remain as a statutory increase, and we look to supplement that over the long term with these add-on bonuses to ensure that the pensioners continue to enjoy at least 75% of CPI over the term of their lives.
And on the land in Saldana, I think that we'd like to thank you for bringing the issue up. If there is a land that the municipality of Saldana would like to buy, I think it's better that we engage with them directly. We've just appointed a new group executive for properties, Ms. Libuli, and I will ask her to contact the municipal manager so that we can start the negotiations, so that we don't negotiate here. We just, as long as they pay a fair price.
Through the chair, can I request Nonkululeko to comment on the salary increases? All I can indicate to this committee in terms of the moratorium, the executives sitting in this room for their salary increases for this current financial year we're in did not get anything because we are honoring the moratorium that was imposed by the shareholder in November last year. But I will comment further on that. But I'd like Mr. Shu to then comment on the other levels in the organization in terms of what the salary increases were.
Thank you. The salary increases for bargaining units was 8.5%. That is in the 2011-2012 financial year. And management got 6.7%. The level below the Group EXPO, which is the extended EXPO, got 6.3%. Group EXPO got 5%. In this last negotiation, as the chairman has indicated, Group EXPO got 0%. And the level below got 4.7%. Management got 6.6%. And the bargaining unit got 8.4%. Thank you.
Just indulge me. I don't think we should just not comment on such a laudable move by which has just been expressed by the by Mr. Mkonazi. It really humbles us as a portfolio committee to see such outstanding top-class leadership being very sensitive to what the shareholder was asking for. The shareholder was not very sadistic and in asking for austere measures. You know, when we look at the political scenario in the whole country, everyone is watching us. One doesn't even have to allude to Marikana. So I think what he's done is very laudable. And I think it must really be highlighted separately. Perhaps on the floor of the National Assembly, it should be a statement by the Central Committee. That in keeping with what the Honourable Nana said, there are so many good things that happened in Transnet, but which are just swept under the carpet because of out of modesty, I think you deserve a round of applause. Thank you very much for that sensitivity.
Chairman, can I quickly say this? How this 0% increment will not affect MPs all of these days? Chairman of the portfolio, we do hear the feedback, but we need to qualify it with a statement that the shoulder minister is working on a new remuneration philosophy, which we are hoping will be finalized within the next 2 months. And it is based on that new guideline that then we will adopt that. Maybe I'll come back to this committee next year with a different story, because we are waiting for that guideline. Thank you, Chairman. We'll leave it over to you.
Chair, I'd like the CFO to comment on the 8.4 billion irregular expenditure from the previous year. How was the money lost? Just to add that the money was not lost. It was irregular expenditure in the sense that correct procedures were not followed in spending the money, but value was obtained by Transnet. So I'd like the CFO to explain further what happened.
Thanks, Brian. You're quite correct in your assessment of the situation as it relates to the 8.3 billion. The 8.3 billion, as the committee would recall when we presented last year, was made up of a number of contracts. The irregular nature of the contracts emanates from the manner in which the contracts are awarded in terms of how Transnet applied its own procurement policies as it relates to the awarding of those contracts. The contracts were awarded, the work was then performed by the contractors, and value, as Ryan said correctly, was received by Transnet for the work that was actually performed. So the money was not spent in vain, it was not fruitless and wasteful, but it was actually the manner in which the contract was awarded was irregular.
That's not, with due respect, that's not the point. The point is this, how, why it was not picked up by the Lubango Board of the External Auditors? Because we read about it in the press, you see, that's the whole point. It's like whistleblowing. So with respect to the same, me and Mr. Molefe, as well as Mr. Bonazzi, that was accepted in the way you explained it. But the point is that now why, how did that escape the external auditors? Because, I mean, Zaluba, Kuboda are not a small firm, the form of refuge.
No,
even the AG's office, we actually hammered the AG's office itself. We say there are three levels of auditing. There's an internal auditing committee, then there is the external one, and then the AG. We're not just coming hard on your own external auditors. But that's it. The way it came up, it appeared, you see that now, there's a bad reflection on you as a good man and otherwise good management. That you're not doing your job. When you should do your job, but it should have been flagged before to look, here is what went wrong. It's not financial malfeasance. We did get to him, but, you know.
I think you've made the point.
Chair, it was reported in last year's financial statement, and we were hauled over the coals by this committee, by the MCOP, and SCOPA, and we answered and answered on this, that it related to previous years, and that it was brought up by the external auditor, Sizwe Zaluba Kobodo. They were not even there, they were appointed this year. So, it related to yes, yes. The thing is that whenever this 8.4 billion comes up, it's news. So it gets repeated over and over again because it's good for news.
That's why I want to kill it once and for all.
National multi-product pipeline and the product that is not in the pipeline. Charles, if you can just comment about the industry dynamics there and what is happening to product in the industry.
Chairman, thank you. It's true that although there has been an overall decline in the pipeline volumes from 2010, which was of course the World Cup year, compared to what we had forecasted and budgeted. The volumes in the present year, 2012, are very similar to that of last year, 2011. So it is the same sort of pattern we're seeing continuing in 2012 than we had in 2011, but lower than in 2010 when we had the World Cup. Chair, on the issue of the crude from Iran, we can't really comment on this because this is production challenges from our clients. But my own view is that one specific client would have had some challenges during the transition period, but that as it is now stabilized, I don't think there are any more problems from that perspective. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, we note the comments that have been made about the successful visit to Salt River and to Goodsport, and would like to assure the committee that in the hands of Mr. Richard Valihu, who is the CEO for Rail Engineering, he's a world-class manager, and that our Rail Engineering has got vision. They have got very ambitious projects. I don't know, Richard, if you want to say one or two things about your plans for the future in terms of African locomotive and research and development at Rail Engineering.
Thank you, GC. Honourable members, as you would have, first of all, thank you for the comments. I'll take it back to the workers in Kudaspur and in Salt River and convey your appreciation as well. We have a number of projects that we are working on at the moment, not just in terms of the diesel electric locomotives. You know, two of the world's biggest capabilities programs are now located in South Africa, one being the Transnet 3 billion offer, which is going to go into rail, and the other is Prasa, of course. And they're also locating the build of those metro coaches in TRE, as you may have read in the newspapers. So there's a great deal of good work going through. But we're also having a vision of becoming an OEM ourselves, not just in the wagon build and in the metro, but also in the locomotive build going into the future. And I do believe that there's a great deal of potential, and it supports the role of SOEs, especially in a developing economy like ours, as well as the industrialization base, which we're also trying now to lift up, not just TRE, but also Tier 2 suppliers as well in the country. So from that point of view, what you've seen is just at the tip of the iceberg. We've got a great vision going forward, you know, sort of revamping our foundries and all the other operations that go with putting together world-class production facilities. Thank you very much, GC.
Honorable Chairman, Dr. Mukwena asked a question about the lifespan of the Transnet board. On that point, Honorable Chairman, we were appointed as this current board effectively from December 2010. And it's a three-year appointment, but each year reviewed. So that the shareholder has got certain rights on a year-to-year basis. Thank you, Chairman. Mulefe will continue answering.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, for the behavior of the port manager in Cape Town, I wish to personally take responsibility. It's a good thing that this meeting is being held in Cape Town because I have an opportunity to go there immediately after this and demand an explanation. And I would like to assure the committee that it will not happen again. I will personally look into the matter. Thank you. The buying of new locomotives. I think the question was whether we cannot build these locomotives ourselves. The truth of the matter is that we do not have the intellectual property rights. So we have to get them from overseas original equipment manufacturers like GE, who have already designed a locomotive. So we can't design a GE locomotive without paying GE. So what we do is we buy the locomotives from them, but we insist that they be built in South Africa, even though they are GE locomotives and they still carry the GE banner. Going forward, Rail Engineering is working on developing a South African-made locomotive with our own intellectual property rights. And I hope that that project in research and development should be finished in the next 4 to 5 years so that we can start manufacturing our own made-in-Africa locomotive. So they are working on it. There is a group of engineers that are working on designing our own locomotive. But until then, we have to use the intellectual property of others. Teachers and learners, Ms. Longwood can comment on that, but we have a program for training teachers to improve the skills of teachers that we sponsor as a Transnet.
Thank you. This particular one that is highlighted here is for teaching learners and teachers on sports, on different codes of sport. It's actually to highlight, to uplift in the rural community the level of sport in terms of referees and umpires, and allow that they use the platform to so that they don't get involved in things that are not good for school children as well. But we, just to add on what the HEC has mentioned, we do sponsor teachers in uplifting them on math and sciences. We do have programs that addresses in particular that part. Thank you.
Chair, on the theft of goods on the railways, I'd like the CFO to answer that question.
Thank you, Brian. There has been a significant focus that has actually been placed by Transnet on the concern that was raised by the committee last year around theft of goods and the safety of goods on the railway. And we've appointed quite a few individuals in that area that actually take care of this for us from a group perspective. And we see that there's a significant decrease in the number of incidents compared to the prior year in terms of the value of goods that is lost to criminal conduct has actually reduced by 74%. And the number of criminal cases that we've actually registered as a result of these cases actually increased to about 73 compared to about 35 in the prior year. So there has been a positive trend as it relates to theft in the railways.
Chair, there was a specific question about regulation, especially with regards to the port regulator. I think the problem that we had there is that we did not have an agreed methodology with the port regulator on how to calculate tariffs. And so we used a particular method to arrive at a request for a tariff increase, and the port regulator applied another method. And so there was a disjuncture in what was finally agreed on. During this year, we have had engagement with the port regulator, and I think that we are finding each other, certainly as far as the methodology is concerned. And we expect the outcome, at least this year, to be aligned roughly with because we are now talking about the same priorities with the port regulator. But I don't think it's for me to announce it. The port regulator will announce at the right time. But in the application process, I'm happy to announce that we have had engagement with the regulator and that we are agreeing on the methodology of how there should be tariff increases on in the ports. The ICMS, so we have Mavanda, who is the new head of legal at Transnet, who will talk about where it is hidden, the act.
Thank you, Chair. The Integrated Coastal Management Act is administered by the Department of Environmental Affairs, and it seeks to regulate environmental issues around the coastal areas. The bill, the implications of the bill on Transnet are that certain of port land and infrastructure will be affected because it seeks to bring that into the fold of the public sphere such that the environmental affairs so that has an impact on Transnet's balance sheet, obviously, because that becomes, in a sense, public land. Where the bill is at the moment is with the executive. We have successfully persuaded officials at the Department of Environmental Affairs on the huge implications on Transnet. Financial implications and balance sheet implications, and they have been persuaded and are willing to amend the bill accordingly, such that to the extent that the infrastructure, port infrastructure and port land is affected, the wording will accordingly be amended. And that infrastructure and that port land remain transit land. Our concerns are being addressed. Thank you.
But in the meantime, if you have a copy of the Act, you can make it available.
We have the copies of the Act. I think we must congratulate you of achieving this. This is a major breakthrough. We wanted to fight for you, but you've solved your own problem.
But no, but you must continue. The fight is not over. Chair, on the 89.6 million wasteful expenditure and the 115 million regular expenditure and the corrective action that is taken and the details thereof, I'll ask the CFO to shed light on that.
Thank you, Brian. In terms of the 89 billion rand fruitless and wasteful expenditure, this is made up of numerous incidences across Transnet. I think there's probably in excess of 200 of these incidences. So they're not like the incidences that you see on the irregular expenditure side where they large globular numbers. And they relate to incidences such as where an employee would be driving a company vehicle and effectively be involved in an incident or an accident, and as a result of that we incur the expenditure, we have to fix the vehicle. And it relates to those type of incidental incidents where we incur expenditure that then becomes irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Also, there are some contracts where there are onerous clauses in the contracts, and because of the operational nature of our business, we incur certain penalties. Like, for example, when we rent vehicles and we do not return them by a certain date for whatever reason, and then we incur a penalty on that, and then effectively incur it, that penalty becomes a fruitless and wasteful expenditure. In terms of the 115 million, the bulk of the 115 million relates to the four contracts that have been reported separately. And again, in each of those instances, we can confirm as it relates to the irregular expenditure, all the disciplinary inquiries relating to those four contracts that have been reported have been finalized. And people have either left the organization or have been disciplined appropriately. In terms of the criminal cases, I think we've reported that on the slide in terms of the number of cases that we've reported to SAPS, and that obviously follows the criminal process. But we do follow those up on a regular basis in terms of what happens on that side. In terms of the other question that the Honourable Member asked around the number of disciplinaries that relate to these instances, why are there only 10? I think it relates to the fact that there are bulky contracts. So you will probably, in the irregular expenditure place, like for example on the 8.3 billion, there was only three contracts that made up the 8.3 billion. So you would find that probably only 10 people were involved in that process. And that is why you find that there's not a correlation between the value and the number. It's actually the number of contracts that give rise to the number of people that get disciplined. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair,
I think my question is, what reasonable steps do you do to prevent irregular expenditure, because that was highlighted in the auditor's report. The historic is fine, but what do you do for the next financial year to prevent the instances that you've alluded to?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think in terms of the presentation, there is a slide that actually covers that in terms of what we're actually going to be doing proactively going forward. And those steps effectively revolve around the fact that we're going to continuously create PFMA awareness at the highest level, from EXCO to extended EXCO, which is probably covering the top 200 people in the organization. And if you look at the nature of the irregular expenditure that we've incurred this year and the last year, probably 66%, well, let's call it 60 to 75% of the expenditure relate to procurement-related activities. So what we're actually trying to do is create awareness among the individuals that have the ability to conclude contracts, which is effectively EXCO and extended EXCO people, around what does it mean to have the power to conclude a contract, and what processes and steps you need to follow from a procurement perspective before you conclude the contract. If you follow those processes, you shouldn't end up being in a position where you have to report these irregular expenditure issues. At least 70% of them should go away. So the initiatives that we're actually targeting is effectively ensuring that the individuals that have the power to conclude a contract is empowered to understand how they should go about concluding it. And then secondly, that's the awareness bit, and the second bit is actually increasing the ability to report and monitor, and continuously report and monitor on these things. So Brian did mention that there is a system that we put in place, which is called Cura, which which will give us the ability to actually continuously monitor and report on the incidences that we actually identify in terms of what happens from the training perspective, what are the control weaknesses, what's happening with the disciplinaries and the criminal cases.
Chairman, if I can deal with the remuneration and board issues at this stage, the question of fees to non-executive directors, these are determined by the shareholder at an AGM on an annual basis. Now, if you then look at the increase that is picked up, it's dependent on board size as well. Because at particular points in the history of that board was not a full board. It did become a full board at a particular time. But those fees, even at the last AGM, were not increased. And even at the previous AGM, they were not increased. So the fees are what they are. And the philosophy behind them, it's not attendance fees like for each board. No, it's a fixed fee per annum for various categories of work that you do. Whether you've got 30 meetings or 100 meetings, the fee doesn't change. Therefore, the board is protected from potential exploitation if you are worried about that. Now, the question of the long-term incentives and the short-term incentives, I touched on it a little bit earlier on, but maybe not directly. If you look at the annual report that we've just given you, we have paid the short-term incentives for the year 11-12. I'm aware that there was a moratorium which the minister put through to the company in November 2011, but the moratorium came late in the financial year. We therefore could not backdate that, otherwise we would have got into trouble with individuals' contracts in terms of the short-term and the long-term incentives that those individuals do deserve. Now, having said we have paid the STI for 11-12, we will be paying the LTIs because the LTIs are banked. It's old money that the people have banked in, and certain performance criteria is expected on a yearly basis before those monies are paid out. So we'll be paying out those at a particular time this year. Now, in view of the moratorium, which we have said we will abide by to the shareholder, effective the current financial year we're in, we are then waiting for the new remuneration philosophy before we begin to change one or the other methodology of how we are rewarding executives. Now, the other question that talks to the number of boards that individuals sit in. This board does not appoint directors. The appointment of directors is a shareholder mandate, and therefore we get guidance from the shareholder in terms of who the shareholder wants to put on those boards. But from a time management, the point is valid. My job then as chairman is actually to monitor the performance of the non-execs in terms of doing what they're supposed to be doing. But by the way, let's not forget, these non-execs are not full-time. They're actually part-time. And from that perspective, you don't expect 100% of their time to be served on a Transnet board type and environment. That's why then some of them do have a certain number of boards which look high. And also you need to look into detail as to what types of boards are these, because some are not actually operational boards. They're investment companies. That some of the, I'm aware at the moment, Skosana could be one type such individual who is involved in investment companies, where his name would appear as if he is a full-time board and these are not operational boards. They are financial transaction type boards. But that concern is something that we look at when we evaluate the board on a yearly basis. Is this member still adding the value that we want that member to add? And as chairman, I then have to make one or the other recommendation to the shareholder. And hopefully I'm aware that the shareholder, by the way, is looking into this point from even a philosophy on how the shareholder appoints boards. So this is one of the basic things that now the shareholder will do going forward in terms of assessing whether that particular non-exec who is about to be appointed will have the time for that particular board. Thank you.
Chair, on the disciplinary hearings, I think we've spoken about the wasteful expenditure. Disciplinaries, the 10 is the disciplinary hearings that have been completed. But you will see that the number of disciplinary hearings that have been initiated has increased. And so, given that a lot of them will be completed during this financial year, you will see that number of 10 disciplinary hearings completed increasing during this year. But the ones that have been initiated have increased by a big margin, as I indicated earlier in the presentation. Judicial proceedings, I think Mr. Singh will talk about what judicial proceedings are.
Chair, you raised an issue around the director's report. On page 107 of the financial statements, you will see that there is an amount of about 256 million that is disclosed, where we have judicial proceedings instituted against us, where we do not expect any losses to materialize, and there are probably about 18 million worth of judicial proceedings for which we've actually created a provision in the financial statements.
We have dealt with the ICMA. I think we have dealt with all the issues that have been raised. Thank you.
As a matter of interest, in the past there used to be, I'm asking this question in relation to the performance of Bafana Bafana. These days we celebrate if Bafana Bafana loses with a small margin, like on Friday, you know 1-0, it's a good result for us. I know you. Yeah, we've lost less than this, you know. In the past, when we were so proud of Bafana Bafana, this is the Dr. Kumalo time, you know, King of Chiefs players, you know, Dr. Kumalo. you know, Lucas Hadebe's era, where Bafana Bafana was on top of its game. I know there used to be something called Transnet School of Excellence. What happened to Transnet School of Excellence? In the light of our dwindling soccer performance, on a serious note, in the light of our dwindling soccer performance, what happened to
Thanks, Chair. Chair, when we went to Salt River and we spoke to the students, we were exceptionally impressed at the whole training operation that Transnet had going at Salt River. And the chairperson actually asked one of the students, he said, would you go back to your school and promote the fact that you have a potential career at Transnet? And he said, yes, he definitely would. I want to know, what kind of, for lack of a better word, advertising program does Transnet have to incentivize young people to come in and work for Transnet in all the various aspects? Because let me tell you, I mean, little boys love trains, and, you know, even little girls love trains and Meccano and all of that. And when we were at Salt River, she said to the chairperson, this is great. It's like Meccano on a great big scale. And I don't think South Africans understand the potential jobs that they would have at Transnet. And I think it's such an untapped market. Is there anything, are there any ideas in place? How do we make Transnet sexy for kids entering into the market?
Yes, Jefferson, two quick ones. They are linked with tourism. What? my my sage is behind me. He has this. I say 1A, 1B. Yeah, no, it's the question of, it's linked to question to the CAPEX project of 300 billion, the rollout thing. You know, the intractable question of the Cape Gate and Standard Gate was, as you roll out, it's transferred, you have the international rollout, you will obviously be hindered by this hiatus of the Cape Gate and the Standard Gate, especially with the overchance and the potential market that's in Africa. I wonder how far have you gone, DOT, in trying to reconcile that aspect. Because you see, it's obvious that if you just go become very bullish, concentrate on your spend that money on the Cape Gate, you'll enrich it and you'll be very sophisticated and strong. And it will actually become, you'll be shooting yourself in the foot, because you're not going to go beyond the borders of other life. Then you'll be faced with this elephant in the room. I don't know whether you want the portfolio committee to do anything, because you're not going to duplicate. Because the policy issue that resides in the domain of DOG. Now, at what level, how far did you go with that? Now, a big part of it is chairperson. The Transnet's got some 28,000 running kilometers of railage, and they got 8,000 of that kind of dormant. When it says no longer running, what is your strategy there? In either making them viable or otherwise? Because you know, they run into most of those what are now ghost towns, like Lockport and Hanover and Wombats, etc. I mean, Nelstrom and so on. So, what is the strategy? Also, those properties, I'm glad about the property division now, those properties that are very dealers, still in their fund, because they could be vandalized if there's no strategy.
Just on the pipelines, there were on page 119 three major challenges addressed on pipelines, on volume, annual volume, the security incidents, and the capital spend. Have you made progress on those three challenges with the pipelines reported in this annual report? Similarly, Durban Port Terminal, Container Terminal, Pier 2, seems to be problematic for days on end and ongoing. Have you managed to solve those problems? And lastly, your turnaround of your ships. I think it stands at National Port Authority, you report 54 hours, and your ideal is 48 hours. Have we made progress since the report was tabled on the turnaround of ships in the National Ports Authorities?
Chair, I will ask Ms. Ndongo Sishi to talk about the School of Excellence, and for Richard and Ms. Ndongo Sishi to talk about advertising our programs, for training programs for the artisans and young people that are joining Transnet, training programs, and then Mr. Gama to talk about the Cape Gauge, Standard Gauge, and the 8,000 kilometer. I must say that yesterday we were having an expo meeting, and somebody said we've got 20,000 kilometers of rail, and Mr. Gama bitterly pointed out that in fact it's 30,000. So it was a very hot issue yesterday. And then the pipeline progress, Charles to talk about it, and Mr. Sotigua to talk about ship turnaround time and problems as well.
Thank you. The Transnet School of Excellence is still in existence. Yes, it is still in existence. It's still operating. The role of Transnet in the School of Excellence is the educational part. The role of SAFA is the sports part. It's a partnership in terms of that school.
there are challenges around.
I mean, she can stop right there. The mere fact that she mentioned SAFA. I mean, you know SAFA, Joy.
Actually quite good when it comes to high speed, especially on
especially in our country, which is quite mountainous and has got a very difficult topography. We probably are well placed to continue with what we have because the cost to replace this would be just too prohibitive. But I think there is a philosophical debate in terms of people saying that there's a better speed that you can get, but they're not much. You know, an extra 30 kilometers of speed versus the cost is not going to take us anywhere. The branch line strategy that we have is aimed at reviving some of the old dormant lines that Mr. Mkwena talks about. It's part of our strategy of shifting from road to rail. We want to concession some of the branch lines so that they support the primary network, so that we run a hub and spoke system where we can have local economic development being stimulated, but also shifting a lot of commodities, especially short haul, from road to rail. So the branch line strategy aims to revive some of those lines, so that we can see higher employment creation as well as local economic development. We're working very closely with municipalities and provincial governments around this particular strategy, and as we roll out the branch lines, you'll begin to see a lot of shift back to rail.
Mr. Mola will talk about the progress on the pipeline.
Thanks, Group Chief Chairman. To Dr. Kurnov, the volumes, just to recap again, doctors, is to say that significantly lower than 2010 at the time of the World Cup, but in 2012, very similar to 2011. But there is a 5 to 6% drop. We are saying the reasons for that we can summarize in sort of three broad categories. One is, of course, economic activity. We would say that even the request from Eskom to the mines to use with power, that has an influence on our outputs. There, of course, are certain market changes that have happened, and it comes in with regulation on the liquid fuel side, where we say that those market changes are causing volumes to shift from areas of supply. And then, of course, lastly, we mustn't underestimate things like efficiency. I think in the broader sense, in our industry, efficiencies have come through. An interesting one that is also starting to feature is the Gautrain. So we would, all these things start ending up having a effect on the volumes that are out there. Chief, but just to say, we've also had the discussion with our board just the other day as to now, come on, get those volumes. And we are then saying we are looking towards keeping on using our DJP line to protect certain volumes that we would have lost in the NMPP, and also to bring a partnership with TFR where we protect volumes in outlying areas, because that seems to be the area where we are losing volumes at the moment, because, as I said, the market changes that are happening. It's a pricing issue that really counts against us there. We will attack it through a partnership with TFR. Chair, on the security side, up until now, at the end of August, we have had 20% less cases of the problems. And if we say the problems, it really relates to theft of cable. But the one that has been an issue for us is, of course, the theft of product. Now, we had 3 cases of that up to this stage last year. At the moment, there's only 1 small case that we've had. I believe that the whole new approach of our security group in Transnet has made it a major change. The previous general talker, the previous general, now Mr. Talker, is making wonderful inroads in terms of protecting that part of our concern. And we are even making good progress with the SAPS on opening cases where such theft has taken place. Chair, on the capital side, the underspending in 11-12 was because of certain changes that were made in terms of the NMPP project. Now, as our group chief indicated, at the moment we're now focusing on rebaselining the 2 terminals. And in 12-13, we do believe that we will get back to the amount of capital spending in the year that was originally in the budget. And then, as the group chief indicated, hopefully the completion of the project with the two terminals by December of next year. Thank you, Chair.
I think that was it.
Chair, Mr. Sotito and Mr. Moroi on the DCT program and the ship turnaround times.
Thank you, GCE. Thank you, Chairman. Just very briefly on DCT, specifically Pier 2, which I think was the Honourable Member's question. Historically, at Pier 2, we have had significant productivity issues and efficiency issues. But through various interventions that were made in the last 12 to 18 months, we've seen significant improvement in the productivity levels at Pier 2. Last year, we're averaging on a monthly basis 21 gross train moves per hour at Pier 2. Currently, we're averaging 27 gross train moves per hour. So we've seen a gain of roughly 6 to 7 moves per hour that we realize at Pier 2. The gross crane moves per hour is the mechanism that we use to track the productivity at the terminal. So that is the indicator also to our customers of how fast it is that we are loading and unloading their vessels to enable them to be able to get out of the terminal quicker as well. Also, we track dwell time, which is the length of stay of the containers at the terminal, and DCT Pier 2, in fact, has been recognized recently by the World Bank as a leading terminal in terms of the dwell time. We're averaging between 3 and 4 days dwell time at Pier 2 currently. The area which in parallel we're also addressing at Pier 2 was to replace the old and aging cranes that we have at the terminal. The GCE mentioned earlier that we will be taking delivery of 7 new tandem lift ship-to-shore cranes. This is the first of their kind at our terminals, with the capability of lifting up to 4 20-foot equivalent units onto and off a vessel. Currently, the ones we have can lift 2 containers on and off a vessel. So with the arrival of the new cranes, this should also have an impact on productivity. But as this is happening, if you actually take a drive to Pier 2 currently, it is a construction site because we've had to do a lot of work to improve the paving and also to set back the rails so that they're able to take these new cranes that will be delivered later to the terminal. So we have seen improvement significantly at Pier 2.
Thanks, sir. We are working together with the various terminal operators in setting up performance standards in terms of the license agreement that we've signed with them. And I think, as Carl indicates, because of the day-to-day meetings, monitoring operations within the chain in the port, we are beginning to see an improvement in the turnaround times.
Chairman, thank you. I take it you've dealt with most of the questions. We'll hand it over to you once again, Chairman.
Thank you. You were out with your question.
Can I ask
the next
Thank you very much, Chair. It's once more again, actually. On the question of that V&A waterfront transaction, actually, I just wanted to check the status thereof as to how much I managed to get from that transaction.
The V&A was sold to the PIC before my time. I don't know how much was with the
I think
it
was about 7 billion,
isn't it? Yeah, 7 billion.
Mm. Yeah.
But I was never involved in this.
So Brian had nothing to do with it. I think we've come to the end of this part of our meeting, and I'd like to thank Mr. Molefe and the chairperson of the board for this quite positive report that
I think from here you can only move further up. Don't look back. Don't slide back. I think there's something that I wanted to, I didn't want to raise it earlier on because I want you to remember it when you leave here. And that, you know, something that is of great concern, I think, to all of us. Rail accidents. Not people who cross, you know, these tracks, but where you have people playing Russian roulette with young kids or poor farm workers and so on. And then I think it may be good for Transnet to say, you know, there are booms there, so these people just, you know, disregarded that, and they, like the one that we had in Kales Rafir, you know, where this chap just managed to get around the boom when it was down. So I don't. I don't want you to feel guilty about this, but what I want to request on behalf of the committee is for you to go and check, you know, where we have these level crossings, where it's just a boom that someone can just, you know, go around and end up in front of a train with more than 20 people on a horse-drawn cart or whatever it is. You know, that we look at all the areas where we have this level crossing and try and come up with something that will make it practically impossible for someone to play Russian roulette with the lives of, you know, especially school children and farm workers, because these are really, in most instances, the victims of these accidents. You know, when we went to Richard's Bay, I think members did not raise it. We were not so happy about the role or participation of women in that place. All the places that we visited, be they the harbors or whatever, you know, people were bragging about transformation and the position of women. And, you know, we always say to show whether or not the country is on the right direction, you use the position of women as your yardstick. You know, what is the position of women in that country? And then you tell yourself whether or not the country is on the right one. But we weren't so impressed when we got to Richards Bay, really. So we would like you to pay some attention to that area. And one thing that the committee will always ask our state-owned entities is, how does the local community benefit from whatever program that you're undertaking? And in Saldanha Bay, it seems the relationship between business and whoever's doing work there is not so good, you know. So that's one area also that we would like some attention to be paid to. Because all the other areas, we had some very positive feedback from the community. Because what we do now, Mr. Mulefe, is that when we go to an area, we try to meet with all the identified stakeholders and to hear from those that we have identified as beneficiaries of this project, for them to tell us. That's why when we go to, for instance, to Transnet Rail there in Kudusport, we talk to those learners, you know, because they are the beneficiaries of this. Work that you are doing there. We want to hear from them, that hear some feedback from them. So in this case, the business community in Saldanha Bay were not so
positive about the relationship with what we are doing. So I just thought we should also bring that to our attention, that you know, the work that you are doing is very commendable. You're doing a lot of good work, and we don't want to leave people who are undermining that that good work that is being done all over the country. So I just thought we should, we're not going to discuss that, we just thought we should bring it to your attention, but to thank you for the outstanding work that under your leadership. I don't know what your other names are, but like I said earlier, we have knowledge and gratitude. And we can only be positive. I don't know what the chair of the board's other name is. But really, we are very proud of the work that you're doing. And whenever you hear what you think negative comments from members, it is just say to you that you are only human, and if you hear that everything that you're doing is 100% perfect, you must be worried. You know, you won't drop. So anyway, this brings us to the end of this part of our meeting. It's adjourned, but members will remain to consider the minutes of our previous meeting. Let's take 5 minutes.
I'm seven offices.
Okay.
So at least if we email, we could see which one is the 14, which one is 7, 14, ne?
Thank you.
We know you always do that. But you see your name is that. Honorable Michael Moose, Honorable Maria Feker, the minute of the 21st of August. The minute of the 21st of August. Honorable members, I will always say
have we all signed up?